Hello, friends, and welcome to the Healing Ground Movement. Now, for more content and bonus features, you can join us on Facebook and Instagram. And remember, all of our content is delivered freely, so please consider supporting the show by donating via the link on our website at healinggroundmovement.com or liking and reviewing the podcast on your favorite platform.
Enjoy today's episode.
Today's episode is brought to you by one of my all-time favorite apps, Blinkist. I found out about this app when I was pregnant and didn't have as much time to read, particularly into those early years of mothering, and it has been a game changer. Blinkist brings you knowledge from top nonfiction and podcasts so you can learn anytime, anywhere, and the best part is it condenses it down into 15 minutes. You can either listen or read to key ideas from best-selling nonfiction in just 15 minutes. So you keep getting all of these great recommendations, all the parenting books, all the health books, all of the things that you know you should be doing and know that you should know more about, but you just don't have the time to read the full version. You can get the Cliff Notes version from Blinkist. They have teamed up with podcast creators to bring you key insights from podcasts as well. And there is expert curation, their handpicked recommendation tailored to what you're interested in. So the more you listen, the more specific your recommendations get. Visit healinggroundmovement.com/resources for a free trial of Blinkist. I know you're going to love it as much as I do. Enjoy today's episode. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Healing Ground Movement Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Carly Hudson, and I am so excited to have Dr. Mac with us today. I had the pleasure of being on her podcast, Mac Performance Podcast, several months ago, and every conversation I have with this woman just lights me up. I always joke that this podcast is two nerds having a fantastic conversation that we put online, and that is really what has happened every time I get to talk with her. So I'm excited to introduce you to Dr. Mac, who is a sports chiropractor in the Twin Cities. She works with adult athletes, keeping them moving and in peak performance. She works with the Minnesota Roller Derby and River City Rhythms, a DCI marching band. So Dr. Mac has a huge population of individuals that she works with. We have a couple of topics that we wanted to talk about today. We got off on a tangent about hypermobility on one of our side conversations. So we're going to bring that in today, but also reviewing her bio, we also had a huge side tangent on treating for the activity and making sure that your return to play matches what you want to do. So we've got a little smorgasbord from the chiropractic perspective today. I'm going to introduce Dr. Mac so she can tell you a little bit more about how she got started in her role.
Oh, Dr. Carly, thank you for having me today. I am so excited. We're the two topics, Ehlers-Danlos and rehab to the activity you want, are two of my big passions. We are about to go on one of my soapbox stand-up, just drag out conversations, because those just make me so happy. Because when it comes to rehab, which I think that would be a good place to start, because that'll lead right into hypermobility. Mm-hmm. Rehab is only as good as what the patient or the person will do, which means gearing it towards their activity. Oh, they're going to do it.
Go figure. Because this comes from sort of a conventional medicine standard, which I know you hear a lot in your office. I definitely hear a lot in my office, where we end up with patients on our table who said, my other doctor said I'm good because I can walk and go up three steps. That's good. But I'm a rugby player. I am a contortionist. I'm a pole dancer. I'm a roller derby. I'd actually don't treat roller derby. I'm very jealous of that. I am any of these activities, and I need more than three steps up my stairs. What can we do now? Is this really as good as I'm going to get?
Oh, it's so frustrating, because mm-hmm. it's sometimes not even the medical professional telling mm-hmm. them, hey, you're good. It's their health insurance going, oh, you've met our definition of daily living. You can get dressed, you can wipe your own bum, and you can drive to work. Pat, pat, out the door you go. And when my athletes come to me, because another group that I work with are professional women's football players, so full gridiron, full kit football, and they pay to play, mm-hmm. which don't get me started on how disgusting that is. But these women are stepping on the field, crushing each other every Saturday, and then having to get ready for their 9-to-5 on Monday. Mm-hmm. And when they get hurt and their insurance only covers getting back to their 9-to-5, we have to add that extra step. And I think that's really where a chiropractor can kind of fit in, because I'm going to give physical therapy their full coup de grace when it comes to post-acute injury, post-surgical. I'm going to say it, physical therapists, they know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And once you get those aspects of daily living and maybe your insurance cuts out or the PT goes, hey, you've reached your yearly max, you're done. Mm-hmm. I think that's where chiropractic can step in to go, okay, we've reached here. Now we got to get to the next plateau. And that next plateau is stepping back onto your sport field, whatever that is.
I love that. And I think it's a really great thing to acknowledge that maybe we don't think about in our own recovery, is that we do sort of have two categories is a strong word, because they all kind of bleed together with a fuzzy middle, but two arenas of care. And that's that post-acute. And so post-acute being initial injury, sharp pain, this just happened and I feel like it's never going to go away. And then after that, we have that sort of lingering, is this as good as it going to get sort of arena. Can you talk a little bit about what the differences between those two are and how rehab might look a little bit different depending on what stage you're in?
Oh, absolutely. So I look at the acute phase, and so within the sports chiropractic realm, I actually will stand on sidelines. So sometimes my acute contact with an athlete is, oh, dear Lord, your knee went where? And I will have seen it go an anatomically impossible position, meaning whatever is left on the inside is most likely not there anymore. Mm-hmm. So that sometimes is my first contact. That is my mind acute. Like right then and there, those first 72 hours of acute injury where we're trying to assess, can this be rehabbed? Is this surgical? Do we need additional imaging? What are some possible complications that we need to address? Because if it were just speaking to the knee as simple as just tearing your ACL, that's one thing. It's when the ACL also has MCL and meniscus and fracture and, oh dear God, what's left of this knee, to kind of nuance out which office is going to give you the best outcome long term. So mm-hmm. That's my kind of acute place. Chronic is where you're having your knee pain. Maybe you had an injury in high school. You've had the surgery, possibly you've had some rehab, but now you're 10 years later and your knee isn't letting you do the activity you want. That's kind of that chronic, always there. Now, are there a multitude of other ways we could define things? Yes, because you have like your subacute where maybe you're 2 weeks post-injury, you weren't diagnosed with anything significant, but your knee is hurting, but you have no prior big injuries. Maybe it's your overuse injury because you've been increasing the amount of running you've been doing and your knee is hurting now that you're reaching 20 or 30 miles a week running. Where is the knee pain? But when we're looking at acute and chronic, I'm talking immediate injury versus had it for a long time.
Good. And when we have that kind of immediate injury, the things that we are weighing as options, you talked about what office is going to give you the best outcome with that acute injury. You know, obviously, if the internal structures of your knee are blown to smithereens, we're probably looking at a surgical office. If not, orthopedic surgeon, and then PT rehab and all of these kind of aspects. And I think what we can sometimes miss is that the rehab in that really acute stage sometimes looks different, and the things that we can do are different because of the why the tissues are hurting is different. Even if we take, okay, we got surgery, we're going to put surgery in its own little pile over here. That's obviously not in our scopes. We'll wait till you come back from the surgeon and kind of take it from there. Even that is post-acute surgery.
Oh, it gets really crazy because, so right now it's prime women's football season right now. I'm spending almost every Saturday night, if I'm not at a roller derby rink, I'm on a football field. And if you don't know, women's knees have a higher risk of injury. So where we watch the NFL and you might hear of like three or four athletes tearing their ACL in a season, I might have five or six on my team. And that might be the preseason before we even really get into contact. So like ACL ruptures are a big deal. And even in that acute, while we're making determination, surgery, non-surgery, we can start rehab. It just might not be as aggressive as having them squat heavy weights, but we're going to be doing movements because the better we prehab before surgery, the better the rehab after surgery goes. And if we can get good range of motion before they go under the knife, again, better outcomes all around when we're looking at what's going on. But there's other things that can happen that we need to account for when deciding. So what's the right rehab to do when you're in that acute phase? Patient to patient, can't tell you.
Fantastic. And then when we get to that longer chronic phase, and because to get back to the kind of the heart of the issue that we want to jump into here is how does rehab continue outside of the return to activities of daily living? And for any of our listeners who don't know, activities of daily living is a insurance or medical standard. It'll probably vary a little bit office to office or insurance group to insurance group, but largely they cover the same basic things. Dr. Mack sort of mentioned a few of them, but it's like, can you do the things that let us decide you can live by yourself? And everything after that is just bonus and cherry on top. So how does rehab start to change when we want to have a return to play for, you know, a hefty sport or being a musician, an artist? I mean, we have, being a mother takes more return to play than the activities of daily living. I got a 40-pound weight that I have to carry around a lot of time. How does our rehab start to look different?
So that's where looking at what the goals are. So if I have someone that's cleared their, let's talk about low back pain, because it's just everybody at some point has low back pain, and that can be a huge debilitator. If you've never had severe low back pain, you don't realize how fundamental your low back is to everything you do. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that it can have a lot of effects on what you're doing. So the first place I want my rehab to start with is pain reduction. I want the exercises to give you relief, to give the person control of their body. Because if I can give you control of your pain, that's power. That gives you a safe space to move. And that's really what rehab is creating a safe space. We then are going to scale it to what you need. So if I'm having someone that has to wrangle a 40-pound wrecking ball in their house, who's not necessarily going to be compliant with wanting to be picked up or and everything, whether that be human, dog, cat, we need to make sure that the rehab, as we scale it up, so I have sandbags. Sandbags are a great way to have something that's not stable, that shifts weight depending upon how the weight shifts, that I can take bag sand out or add sand to make it as heavy as necessary to mimic lifting. So sandbags are unstable and I can play with the weights. So as people are lifting and moving those sandbags, it mimics the activities and the movements that they need. Now, is it as perfect as having a toddler? No, but then we can bring their toddler in and implement the rehab with practicing lifting and carrying their toddler. And it creates an activity where it's almost a family fun. Here's how we make this space safe for movements to be done. Another thing I like to use is called a slosh bar. And that's a PVC pipe with water in it. Because it's going to be unstable, you're going to have to use different core stabilizers as you're doing squats, lunges, maybe shoulder presses, depending upon what part of the body we're looking at moving. And it doesn't have to be very mm-hmm. heavy to get a huge gain from the activity.
All you need is a 5-pound head just throwing itself one direction. You know that you're off kilter. And the big takeaway for me is from these unstable devices to help mimic some of our activities. And sometimes we can even go on unstable surfaces, foam pads, if we're going to challenge legs more than arms, any of these kinds of things, is that the difference here is that we're going from isolating and rehabbing just this one piece, just your low back in that very specific spot, to finding a way to coordinate this one injured place into the whole of the body, where we start working in spirals as well as moving forward and backwards and side to side, which is where rehab always needs to start, because we start simple and get complicated. But if your rehab hasn't gotten complicated, well, you know your life is, so shouldn't it match?
Yeah. When I'm looking at how do I want to start someone, especially in an acute place, I might start them in the safest position possible, which is laying on their back and building exercises on their back. Then going into a quadruped, so on all fours, then kneeling, then half kneeling, then tandem stance, and then feet together, just creating different places of instability. I will say I don't like putting people on balance pads. I don't like doing it.
Unless
their activity calls for it. And that has to do with some research that came out of Australia. So we're about to go nerd. They did some research looking at what are you training when you have someone on a balance pad. So if I'm training someone for concussion, rehabbing them back from a head injury, mm-hmm. and they're having some vertigo symptoms and they're having some eye tracking and vestibular cochlear, so air to eye balance issues, then an instability pad works. But instability pads for knees and ankles actually reduces proprioception and focus in on the vestibular cochlear, which then can make the goal of the rehab not effective. So it all depends upon what you're trying to do, because for the most part, our world is on a stable surface with an unstable body. So I want to destabilize the body, because that actually forces us to function how we function in everyday life versus destabilizing the body and keeping the top stable.
I love that you brought that up. And actually, my population is largely TBI rehab. So I do more stability pad rehab, because that is where you want to bring in and it kind of comes to the point of where we want to challenge what needs to be challenged as part of the whole body. And I think the point I was trying to drive to earlier is that when we have acute pain rehab, acute injury rehab, the goal of the rehab is going to look different, because it's about rehabbing the specific joint back to a functionality. And that's not necessarily, that is absolutely not within itself bad. That's exactly what is appropriate at that time to that joint. But to get to that return to play, if we don't take it to the specificity, from specificity to general whole body engagement, that's where we have that disconnect of, gosh, my knee just always still kind of hurts a little bit. And now my back too. And now I'm just not running as fast as I was, or I don't have the stamina I used to have. And my goodness, I'm probably just getting old. And your body just isn't all in it together.
Yup. It really is that piece of rehab of when I have a football player come in and they're like, yeah, they only had me doing body weight squats or body weight lunges, and we haven't done any heavy loading. We haven't gone into Olympic lifting. We haven't gone into explosive footwork. If they're going to be wearing cleats, they haven't gone in the grass in cleats, or they haven't gone on the turf in cleats. It's bringing it to that next level of specificity into the environment they're going to have to be doing, which again, if your sport is carrying a toddler, getting the toddler involved in the sport that you're going to be doing. So it's really trying to tailor the final step of the rehab to the activity you want to be doing. And then I'll have people ask, well, how long am I going to be doing rehab? And I go, how long do you want your back? How long do you want your knee? How long do you want your body to not hurt? Mm-hmm. The answer is probably forever.
Right? Well, and there's something funky about having been injured, that the actions that we were doing pre-injury, carrying the toddler around without pain, maybe being a little mindful about, you know, not dropping them. By the way, I love that you called that a sport. And it is. But doing all of these rehab, and maybe an easier way to think about it is if your sport is football, all of your training, we called it training before you got injured, but you're doing the same thing eventually, hopefully, that's the whole point, that your rehab is. So we start to call it a different name, and that creates an interesting disconnect of how long do I have to do rehab? And perhaps the question is, how long were you expecting to do training? Because it's the same thing.
Yeah, I like to call it rehab to fitness. Mm-hmm. So I rehab you. So then I can, I have a strength and conditioning coach in my office. So I go, look, I fixed the broken you. You're fixed, but you're not ready for the field yet. Here is a strength and conditioning coach that will get you into the fitness of your field, of your sport. And that is what you're going to be doing from now on to prevent having problems. There might be some maintenance things that we have to clean up. We might have some things that come up that we just hadn't predicted because you hadn't been cutting on a field. You hadn't been hitting other 250-pound people on your field. You hadn't been doing the activity at its full intent. So we have a little bit of polishing, a little cleaning up to do. But ultimately, you're going to be doing fitness for the rest of your life, and your fitness is going to take care of your problem.
I love that. And so then when we think about this kind of idea, we mentioned at the beginning a special population of individuals where rehab becomes even more important regardless of the level of activity. And that is, and I was confessing to Dr. Mack that I've never pronounced this correctly in my entire professional career. She coached me. Let's see how we do. Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. I always stick with EDS so that I can keep sounding smart. But this is a syndrome of hypermobility. Now, we can have muscle and joint hypermobility within the syndrome. There is also ocular, there is cardiovascular. It affects a few more systems because it impacts our connective tissue and a little bit more stretchy in places where we should be a little bit more compact. Now, while this is the syndrome, I do want to acknowledge that there is a spectrum of hypermobility across all bodies. And, you know, you may find as you sit with your friends that you're the person that can touch your toes without even trying, and your buddy next to you is like working their darndest to get to their knees. We have this bio-individuality across the board. So if you find yourself on the stretchier side of the spectrum, or if you have been diagnosed or suspect that perhaps you have EDS, this is the conversation for you. Take it away, Dr.
Oh, within the realm of EDS, I think the other thing that's crazy is people will go, well, I can't touch the floor flat with my palms, therefore I'm not hypermobile. And I'm like, mm-hmm. Your elbows and knees bend backwards. Mm-hmm. Pardon, that's hypermobile. Just because you don't have one aspect, you do mm-hmm. have some other aspects of hypermobility. And the thing that makes it challenging is there's kind of like this triangle that's really common within EDS. And that's where you have the hypermobile individual. They also will have potentially postural orthostatic tachycardia. So when they go from sit to stand, they get lightheaded, woozy, maybe they even pass out. If it's really hot outside, they get lightheaded. They're intolerant to those hot conditions. And the other one, which is a little more rare, is median arcuate ligament syndrome, which involves a ligament in the tummy that when it's not holding the vessel that it's in charge of in place, it then can cause digestive issues. So those kind of three things are really common within that population. And it makes it hard for one, them to find a safe workout to do. Yet for their body, being able to work out is what having strong muscles is what stabilizes their joints. Because mm-hmm. their tendons and their ligaments aren't going to stabilize their joints. So they need the muscles to do it. And if they're not strong enough, they just get super tight while they're just trying to hang on for dear life and keep the person upright. So this is where rehabbing specifically to stabilize their body is really our goal. And then finding workouts that work. Like if I can get them in the gym and lifting heavy and there isn't any risk of them passing out, That's my favorite. But when we also have that POTS issue where they stand up and they go down, it's designing a rehab program, frankly, with them lying on their back. And how do I keep hitting every aspect of their body while they're lying flat on their back so that they are safe while working out?
It is a little bit of finding that, you know, exact middle of the Venn diagram of like, I am strong here, safe there. And I'll say that I find myself in the EDS camp. So it's a fun game to play. I'll tell you that. When it comes down to us, you think about those muscles that are trying to hold for dear life with the ligaments and tendons. And we get a little bit into this negative feedback loop of if your muscles aren't strong, they are going to still contract in their own way to be tight. And we're going to feel that as stiff neck, tight hamstrings, tight low back, all of those areas that's going to make you want to constantly get a massage, which loosens everything up, which you're already too loose. So we have this constant, why aren't these massages sticking? Why aren't they helping? Why do I feel worse sometimes after a really good deep tissue massage? Like now I'm tighter 2 days later from this massage. Why does our body do this? Why can't we just get a massage and call it good?
Oh, I think I can actually bring this around that almost affects everyone, and that's hip flexors. So that anterior hip muscle, this is something that whether you have ED or EDS or not, you can relate to. When you sit for a long time, stand up, and your body almost like pitches itself back forward and you have that really tight hip, it's usually also really weak, unless you're specifically training it. And that's the problem. When a muscle is weak, it gets tight trying to just stabilize and do its job. It is just trying to grip and rip. So when you're having that anterior hip pain and that hip flexor from sitting all day where it's short, then you stand up and it has to go long. And its job is to keep that pelvis in one place. And the pelvis is like, I'm going to go over here. And it's like, no, please don't do that. And it just grips really, really tight. Then no matter how much you stretch it, it just doesn't seem to release. People are all, my hips are so tight. My hamstrings are so tight. Are they tight or are they weak? Mm-hmm. And that's the piece.
And are they doing a job solo that ideally some larger muscles would be helping them out with? You know, your glutes, the larger muscles of your abdominal core, your pelvic floor, all of these things, if we're not in a regular full body movement exercise, something, we don't use them while we're sitting all day. So don't use it, you lose it. And now these tiny little hip flexors and tiny little hamstrings, well, I mean, they're long, but they're skinny, do all the things that they can. And it's just not enough.
No, it's just not cutting it. And that's where that's one muscle that almost everybody has trouble with. Now imagine that in a whole body. And that is EDS.
Yay. So when it comes down to it, you know, we have a couple of different systems that we have to work through with EDS. And you talk about the orthostatic postural issues, digestion being a key one, and then that mobility and that pain. So finding that place, that neat area in which we can move and strengthen and not pass out, you know, crucial to stay awake throughout your workouts, especially if you're lifting really heavy things above your head. It's about safety here. Then what we're hoping for is to create muscles that are going to have strong, healthy tone that will hold your joints closer together, hold them where they belong, because otherwise we're going to have a constant panic signal going to our brain saying, my shoulder is a little further away than I would like it. And this starts to then impact where we are in space. So we also have a little bit of a reputation in the EDS community for clumsiness and lack of body awareness, which again, makes those workouts slightly more challenging.
Yeah, the loss of proprioception within the EDS community, and proprioception being that body awareness, where you are in space, Well, if your joints aren't holding where they're supposed to be, you're not going to know. And that is without conscious effort, you bump into things. Now, I think there's been a recent association with neurodivergence and EDS, which then within neurodivergence, your autism, your ADHD, your dyslexia, your other conditions that can kind of affect that brain chemistry, you have that piece of the puzzle where you have additional brain fog going, I don't know where I am in space because I'm not paying attention to where my body is. And then you're bumping into corners, bumping into walls. The walls are just out to get these people. And that is why they're so clumsy.
And it goes within that neurodivergent spectrum, even anxiety as to nothing makes your brain, nothing high on the list, makes your brain so uncomfortable as not knowing where you are in space. So we have this low level anxiety. And if your body is constantly fighting through the fog of a low level anxiety, higher level processing systems are not going to be working as well because we got to meet basic needs first. And hopefully this long walk for a short drink of water is one more way that we can underlie this conversation about working out and movement and strengthening really is magic, really does get to the heart of a lot of conditions. Now, I don't think either Dr. Mack and I would say that having a good strength training workout would cure autism, but it is definitely, if you are within that EDS crowd and hypermobility crowd, you're going to take a couple of boulders off of your back by taking out that low-level fuzz and knowing where you are in space.
Yeah, it's really interesting when we're looking at current research that is coming out within the realm of where we as a provider medical community have really done disservices to not only our EDS patients, but general musculoskeletal pain patients in general, where in the past, when you've had low back pain, we've told you, hey, go lay down, rest, don't move, which now we're realizing is one of the worst recommendations. And we need to live by the mentality of an object in motion remains in motion. And our ability to move revolves around us keeping moving, keeping exercising, being active. Probably the thing I do as a provider is making, again, movement safe, encouraging people that, hey, I know it's scary. I know someone has told you, I think the thing that drives me insane with knee pain is when patients are told you're not allowed to squat.
Yeah.
Okay. And they're like, yeah, I can't squat. So I can't do that exercise. Oh, how did you go to the bathroom earlier today? How did you get in and out of your vehicle? Do you ever sit on your couch? Because, oh, you shouldn't be sitting on your couch then. Or going at all, seated. Oh, you came in here and you sat in this chair. Oh my God, are you okay? Are you going to die? And they look at me and they're like, shut up. What are you getting at? Moving from a sit to stand is a squat. Going from a stand to sit is a squat. So to do all those activities, you have to be able to move. To live is to move. So when we're told that something is unsafe, I want to know, one, why were you told it was unsafe? And by George, how do we make it a safe movement? How do we get you moving again? Because that's going to fix so many problems. This is not, rehab is about I cans, not I can'ts.
Oh, again, for those in the back, I can't, not I can't. And there's so much fabulous research coming out. And I love now where rehab and brain science are meeting and kind of cavorting together, because that's where it belongs. How we move comes from the motor areas of our brains. We have this conversation back and forward. It's kind of like, I don't know. I actually don't know computers well enough to start to make the metaphor I was going to, but you know, this is just where the instruction is coming from. And if we say we have that low back pain that we keep mentioning, and we're going to lie down and we're not going to touch it, you know, rest, ice, compress. This is all a thing of a past, but this is, you know, this is what we're still following. I still get funny looks from people when I tell people not to ice and compress it. So when we do that, again, we have this loop of use it or lose it. And if we're not using it, we take this very pinpoint area of pain and our brain starts with, ah, you're not listening to me. I'll make it bigger. And we start to smudge that area of our brain to make it bigger. Kind of maybe, and I don't know how many tries you get. I mean, we do get asked three times. That's a good tradition. And we make it bigger and we make it bigger. And finally your brain goes, aha, I see you don't care. You don't need this anymore. So on the motor side of things, instead of having all of these really lovely, intricate twisting and flexing movements for your low back, we're just going to go brick. Good. It does one thing now altogether because that's what you told me we needed. So the longer we go without rehab, the more work we have to do to honestly teach our brain that we're starting to ask for something different and letting our body learn.
Yeah, those cortical smudges in our brain are such a nightmare. And then I think the most frustrating thing for both patients and myself is when they've come in and they're like, I've been in pain for 4 years and I want to be out of pain yesterday. And it's like, you have 4 years of stuff that we have to unpack. We will get it better, but there is some unpacking and relearning and re-educating because our brain and our body is amazing. When we get hurt, it will find a new, fantastic, different pathway to do something to reduce that pain, guarding, apprehension, make something a different way, different combination of muscle engagements that aren't the most biomechanically ideal. They're not the best way to do it, but they did it when we were hurt. And the getting back to the biomechanical way, the best way of moving, is going to take some unpacking and some relearning. Mm-hmm. And that's hard because your body has however many years you let it go to unpack and fix.
In that moment of rehab, it's almost like you're dealing with two different motivations. You have your frontal lobe thinking, processing motivation of, I want to get back on the football field. I want to chase my toddler around. I want to start roller derby because that sounds amazing. And it's been a lifelong dream of mine, personal anecdote. Or you have your brain's goal, which is upright in pursuit of food. Pain, not matter so much. If I can get to food, I can deal with a little pain. And so there's a little bit of that uphill battle of overlaying, I'm going to ask more from my brain and my body than is strictly willing to give out of the gate. Doesn't mean it's not possible. Doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. Does mean that it takes a little bit of decisive commitment and time, quite honestly. How do you deal with that within your patient populations?
It's all about communication. It's all about honesty. And it's all about really the first visit, giving one the necessary information required. Like, I recently had a EDS patient come in and go, I'm having this and this problem. This hurts. I've done PT. I've done injections. I'm doing this. I've been to a massage, like just the gamut. And I went, okay, let's talk about what each provider did for you, what worked, what didn't work. When you went to physical therapy and you were doing home rehab, was it focused on strengthening, stretching, combination? And they're like, honestly, all they focused on was stretching. And I went, okay, so I'm going, in my head, I've already gone, I don't care what they've done now because nothing they did was there to help you at that point. And then I asked, I'm like, has anybody ever really looked at all the problems you've came in with and gone, EDS is the underlying problem? And they went, no. Everybody has their own specialty that they're looking at. And I'm like, okay, everything you're describing can fundamentally be related back to EDS and chronic EDS that hasn't been addressed from a biomechanical strength perspective. Let's start rebuilding your foundation, and we're going to start really slow so we don't make things worse, because when you're already in what we would call a centralized excitatory state, which is simply Anything you do hurts. Anything you imagine you could do hurts. You're so centrally that you're just in agony. We need to calm that down by making small things safe. And then we can slowly build out. The ultimate goal of this person is to get back to the weight room and start lifting. Because when everything started to fall apart, they were told by a provider that the gym was dangerous and they stopped going to the gym and then everything fell to pieces. And I'm like, okay, well, that was the fundamental problem. Now let's back that up and let's rebuild you back to the gym. And that's going to be our goal. And then you have buy-in because I'm working towards what they want. They understand, even though we're going to be taking toddler size steps to get there, they know where I'm trying to push them.
I love it. And so many of these pieces start to undermine a lot of myths that still stay really pervasive within the rehab and care environment. Now, I'll go back and highlight a few others, and I'm going to see if you have any more to throw on the pile. But some of these are things like, once you can control the joint, you're done. That's where we need to introduce the joint back to the joint of injury, I guess I should say. Once we can control the joint of injury, you're done. We have to introduce that joint back to the whole body, get us all talking and being friends again. When you injure yourself, the best thing you can do is rest. The activity that you are doing now becomes your enemy. This is a really big, big myth that drives me nuts, because really the activity that you were doing, something within that needed to change. The whole thing is not your enemy. And your provider solely is in charge of your care. And that's what Dr. Mack just brought up, as far as we need to co-create our goals together so that there is buy-in and progress that matters. It doesn't matter to you as a patient. And frankly, the provider's just wasting their time. So, you have more myths to throw on the pile?
I don't think so. Other than we kind of touched on it, but this is just my own personal rant. If it's a chronic problem, do not, for the love of all pizza, put ice on it. Just don't do it. Put the ice in the glass, add some water, maybe a little lemon, and drink it. Do not put ice on it.
That is the appropriate application of ice within a chronic condition, because hydration will always help a chronic condition. I love that. That's a beautiful takeaway. Dr. Mack, thank you so much for your time, all of your experience. You have such a wealth of clinical experience in the office, on the field, such incredible movements and different types of bodies and experiences that you get to deal with on a daily basis. I think that is just absolutely phenomenal. Where can our listeners learn more about you, the work that you do? Definitely plug that fantastic podcast of yours. Tell us where you are.
Absolutely. So if you're in Minnesota in the Twin Cities, you can always come to my clinic at Mobility Agility Chiropractic Performance. And my podcast is a play off that name, Mac Performance, the podcast that will whiplash you through back to health as it jumps from topic to topic. So I'm also on Instagram and the TikTok, but I'm not been really proactive about posting. The podcast is where I'm sharing most of my information right now, because I've gotten a little busy and I haven't had time to do my other social media. So the podcast is where I'm focusing. But if there's a topic we haven't covered, you can always shoot me an email and go, hey, I want to hear about this. And I search the globe until I find an expert that will talk about it.
Fantastic. Well, definitely check it out. It's a fantastic podcast, lots of great information. And I do wish that the Twin Cities weren't so far away, but next time I'm out that direction, I'm going to be stopping in for a hello. Thank you again for coming and joining us today. And to all of our listeners, I really hope that this conversation on rehab has been enlightening for you. I'm thinking back on our nearly 3 years of doing this podcast, and I'm realizing I don't think we have done a legitimate whole perspective on rehab in all of that time. And so I also feel the need to apologize for a disservice in that, because it is such the perfect starting place for wherever you are is understanding how your body works and where you need to take it. We've talked around it in a lot of really unique, specific areas, but if we can think about the myths that we unpacked today and the special populations where strength training is even more important than the average bear, we can start to look at these impossible chronic conditions and find a way out one toddler step at a time. So I hope that you all took a little something away from this podcast. I look forward to seeing you next week for another episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. In the meantime, be well.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard and got a little something out of it to help you on your journey to health. Please, if you're inclined, share this podcast with a friend so we can help more people lead healthier lives. Now remember, the information expressed in these interviews is for informational and not diagnostic or treatment purposes. However, I hope you find that having the right information and resources can go a long way to helping you on your healthcare journey. Ask the right questions and seek out professional help. And we'll see you next week for another episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. Be well.